Heineken Champions Cup is back with Newcastle as the season's final destination and 19 sides trying to wrestle the trophy from Leinster.
This cup has surely never been won in such an impressive way. It has been a total team effort.
There's lots of bits we can get better at for ourselves, so we're just trying to focus on how we perform better. The start of the competition is so important that we try and get as much as we possibly can out of all the games.
Leinster's title defence begins against Wasps in the competition's opening game on Friday the 12th of October, before nine more mouth-watering matches across round one weekend, including Bath to lose, Exeter Munster and Scarlets against last season's finalists Racing 92.
Heineken Champions Cup
is the one to win.
It's the one to win.
It's the one to win.
Andy Nicol and Martin Williams join our in-depth preview of the European season, and you'll also hear from coaches and star players from across the five pools, including Johnny Sexton, Tom Youngs, Dimitri Zarzewski, Johan van Graan and Mark McCall. We'll look back on Ulster's European Cup success 20 seasons ago and look forward to round one of the European Rugby Challenge Cup as well. That's all to come on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Hello and welcome to a new European rugby season. I'm James Burridge, back with Mr. Silver Fox himself, Tommy May. Tom, great to have you back.
Lovely to be back. Being called the same thing over and over again.
You just love it. I can see the expression on your face is one of unadulterated joy. We have broken the salary cap for our other guest here, Florent Rossonnier, formerly of Racing 92 and Wasps. Florent, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Are you talking euros or pounds here?
Yeah, it depends who's paying. Let's start with the team you expect to surprise us all. I think everyone's saying, well, it could be Leinster Saris in the final. Give me a team who could do a Scarlets, for instance, who could surprise us.
Well, having seen Gloucester at the start of this season, okay, they had a hiccup against Saracens, but I think that Gloucester could surprise a few. They've got a pretty tough pool in Pool 2, Exeter, Cast and Munster, but I'll go for Gloucester.
Florent?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at what I've seen so far in the UK, I think Exeter will be my pick. I think they're coming to maturity. They've got a few years to build themselves up, and now I think they look like something we can surprise us in this coming competition.
Well, as usual, we've been gathering your thoughts on social media, Twitter at Champions Cup. Search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook, and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram. We've asked, which team is your tip to win the Heineken Champions Cup in Newcastle next May, and why? Thank you for all your responses. McJeebers on Twitter says Leinster and Saracens both look strong. Munster and Exeter also have pedigree, with Munster looking a more complete team this year. We'll be reading out more of your contributions during the show. Stand by, though, for an in-depth preview of the new Heineken Champions Cup season.
Hi, I'm Ronan O'Gara, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Well, let's preview all five of the Heineken Champions Cup pools one by one, with Pool 1, Bath, Leinster, Toulouse and Wasps. And Leinster skipper Johnny Sexton says that the holders will be far from complacent.
We've come into, you know, European Cups before as champions and we've retained it. We've come in as champions and we haven't got out of our pool. So, you know, it doesn't count for much. It counts for very little, I don't think. You know, at the time we didn't get out of our pool, I don't think we were complacent. I think we just didn't play well enough, and that's the motivation now this year, is to get better. The other teams across Europe will definitely get better. They've signed better players, they've got new coaches, and we've kept things pretty similar. Felipe coming in has been great, Joe Tamani coming in. So that's the only changes we've had to our environment, apart from losing a few guys. So we're just trying to add to what's gone before us, and you know, that's a pretty strong motivation in itself. And we've got a pretty good balance between young guys and senior guys. So the young guys are hungry because they want more success, and the older guys want to make the most of the last few years. So it's a good mixture we've got there, and hopefully we can drive things on now this year.
Johnny Sexton there. Tom May, how do Leinster get better? I mean, it's frightening if they can.
I think it's every side, no matter how good they feel they're performing, there's always aspects to their game that they can think they can improve on. Probably to a lot of us from an external point of view, we'll look at them and say, well, at times they can play the perfect game. But always as a professional, you're looking to try and improve, strive to just make the little differences that can make such a massive difference on an 80-minute game against some strong opposition. So I think that's what he means by improving. I mean, there's not that many areas, let's face it, that they're not very strong in. So it's pretty tough for them to get that much better.
And Florent, actually, one of the matchups, if you like, we're going to be looking forward to is Sexton against Sopoanga. I mean, these are two world-class 10s, and Sopoanga hasn't tasted what the Champions Cup is all about yet.
No, I think it's going to be, Friday night, Leinster. That could be a big surprise for him. But I think, those guys are going to go as a side, fully professionally approaching the game and just try to put everything they've got. It's the opening of the competition. There's going to be a high excitement for all the players. What's coming in with obviously, a bit of intention, and Sexton and his troops going to be, fairly ready, home ground, home stage. I think it's going to be an interesting combination there.
I think also what we saw last year in the Sam Ahmeds was that actually when needs be, they can slip into an arm wrestle. If it's a wet Friday night, it's tough conditions. Actually, they can grind out wins. And that's exactly what they did against Racing in Bilbao. They want to try and impose their game, play an expansive style of rugby. And, with those two teams, Wasps and Leinster, hopefully we'll see an amazing game. But they have the ability to revert to plan B and very well.
What do you make of Wasps, Florent? I mean, I know you know the team extremely well.
Yeah, I'm following. I mean, from the start of the season, I think they've been a bit up and down, really. They come up with with some good performance, but they haven't really convinced me, 100% about their ability to actually put team down and put them to sleep, really. Last weekend was a loss for them, and then you didn't really expect that.
I don't think you saw that defeat coming, did you, when Gloucester went up to the Rico? I don't think many would have picked that. No. I think the big loss for them is Jimmy Gopeth. I think that's a massive loss for them, whether it be at 10 or in the centre. I think he's a huge loss.
So it's Leinster against Wasps this Friday, the 12th of October. It's a 7:45 kickoff local time. And then the small matter of Bath against Toulouse. Now, that is going to be a fantastic match to watch because, of course, we have Toulouse back in the competition. Revival of sorts, Florent. How important is it, do you think, for French rugby that Toulouse are back in the tournament?
Well, historically, Toulouse is the club. He is Europe, four-time champion. They show us over the 90s, the 2000 years, decades that what they were capable of doing, and I think they pulled the French rugby towards some greatness in club level. But at the moment, Toulouse is in that little dip. They're kind of trying to rebuild the club. They're kind of bringing some new players. They've got youngsters in the squad. Hugo Mola has got a tough job because obviously, as much as he's got a bit of experience as a coach, he's pretty new as well as a coach at that level. He hasn't been tested really so far. So I think Toulouse is going to have to really be on a good day with all, the green line on. But Toulouse is Toulouse. It's State Toulouse, I think. They've got the ability to...
Does that count for much, you think? Do you think tradition counts for much?
I think they've got a big history in the competition, which they can rely on perhaps when they're moving into a game like this against Bath. I think they'll be hoping that Jerome Kino can act as a bit of a Victor Vito, what he added to La Rochelle. I think what they're lacking at the moment is a bit of strength and depth, actually. Years gone by, they had a plethora of French internationals they could just pick out of a hat and have an amazing side. I don't think they've got that at the moment, so I think that's where they're perhaps struggling a bit. I think Antoine Dupont, he came back at the weekend in their 10-0 win over Agen. Him coming back in will really add some spice to their back line.
Well, Bath haven't won the European Cup since 1998, a fact of which skipper Matt Garvey is well aware.
The history of the club's huge. I think the players now are pretty sick of seeing the old photos of old Bath people lifting the trophy. We want to be part of that history, and we think we're in a good place to do it. The depth of squad we've got this year allows us to put out good teams no matter who it is, and hopefully we can get those big wins that we need to get out of the group.
Well, let's speak to one of those aforementioned old Bath people, Andy Nicol, former Scotland international. He won, of course, the competition with Bath when they beat Brive in 1998. Ever been called something so complimentary as that before, Andy?
I've been called a lot worse. I normally agree with everything Matt says. I have to say on that point, I kind of disagree, but I know exactly where he's coming from. It's... When you're at a club that has had success in the past and they've not had much really for quite a while, it's always held against them. But so as players, they can use that in a positive way, I think. And I quite liked his bullishness there. And You know, if you can control that and get it onto performance in the park, then it's going to help them.
And there's a lot been going on at Bath in the last month or so. What with the statement put out a few weeks back, big pressure on Todd Blackadder, and now they're kind of signposting old Stuart Hooper as the future. What do you make of what's been going on at the Rec?
It's almost unprecedented for a professional team to almost lay out its succession plan for all to see. But I think that could be a good thing. I think it takes out all the uncertainty. The club now knows which direction it's going in for the next couple of years. But I think, unfortunately, all what's happened off the field has probably affected the performance on the field. It's just the lack of consistency. It's flashes of brilliance, but interspersed with some poor play. And that's why they've had the results they've had. And when you could get to the top level and into the Heineken Champions Cup, and against the quality of the opposition they've got in that group, then that can be a really difficult thing to stop.
Andy, defensively, Bath have struggled a bit this season. They've conceded more than 30 points four times. Matt Garvey talked about getting some big wins to get out of the group. Against Leinster, Toulouse and Wasps, they would have to be big wins. Where do you think you can see them coming?
Well, they've got to, like every team, Tom, they've got to make the Rec a fortress and try and do that. But that's not been the case. Obviously, Exeter just won there at the weekend. Last year in the Champions Cup, I was there when Starlets destroyed them at the Rec. So if you're not sure of winning your whole games, then getting out of any group is very difficult. So they're playing teams that, in Leinster in particular, just have such a track record. But with Wasps, who've got such an attacking potency to their play, that your defence has to be absolutely bang on. So, again, they've probably shown glimpses of that defensive requirement and necessity in this season. And they can put 80 minutes together, both in offence and defence. That they've got a good side and they've got the ability to do that. But then that means they've got to replicate that on probably five out of the six occasions to have any chance of getting out of the group.
Andy, Rhys Priestland said something interesting after the last Premiership game. He said they need to ask themselves some seriously tough questions, because when the pressure comes, they're letting themselves down. He's calling for awkward conversations to be had in training this week. What do you think he's talking about?
Well, it's one thing talking about it, and I kind of understand what it is. If you've been in any team environment, you almost want those questions to be answered on the training field, so that when it comes into the game situation, they just know how to react. And you look at the best sides, and they don't have to look too far in the group. The likes of Leinster, to go through last season's Heineken Champions Cup completely unbeaten was incredible. It means that they're getting everything right. And so this is inconsistency I've been talking about. And that's probably what's frustrating for Rhys Priestland as one of the playmakers, that sometimes everyone's on the same wavelength and they're all pulling in the right direction and the game plan can just seamlessly work. Other times, I guess, he'll feel at times that he's looking around and people aren't offering themselves in the right position. The offloads aren't going to hand. And there's only one way you can sort that out, and that's the training ground. But we all know that then transitioning that from the training ground into the white atmosphere of the Champions Cup, when the quality of the opposition is so tough, is really difficult. And this is where the step up, the intensity will be. It is a step up. Even though, the Gaelic Premiership is an intense programme every week, there's tough games. If you're slightly off your game, you could be found out, like we saw with Leicester and Bristol the weekend. But the Champions Cup is a step up, and then you don't want to be trying to find your game, hoping that everyone's going to be on the right wavelength when you go out onto the Rec to play Toulouse. You want to know it on the Thursday, Friday, when you do the training session, that it will be right the next day.
Andy, just on to Glasgow Warriors. They're top of their conference in the Pro 14, 5 out of 6. They had a bit of a stinker last season, I think, in Europe compared to where they thought they were going to be. They got a tough group in Pool 3. How do you think they're going to get on?
Yeah, it's interesting. They have had a good start to season. It should have been an unbeaten start to season. They had a collective brain explosion, I think, down in South Africa to lose to the Southern Kings. But you actually look at who they've played. They've not been the top sides. Yes, they beat Munster, but that was when Munster were under strength at the start of the season, and they beat Connacht away from home. In the last 2 weeks, they've got bonus point wins, but against opposition, they didn't actually play that great. They have the attacking game, without doubt. And where they were found out last year in the Champions Cup was the physicality. Exeter, Montpellier blew them away last year at times. That and Leinster as well, obviously. And so that, for me, is a step up. to move from where they've been playing in the Guinness Pro 14 against, in the last 2 weeks, Dragons and Zebre, to then have to step that up to play Saris, who would be probably in the top three teams in Europe currently, playing at the intensity we know they can. This is going to be a massive step up for Glasgow.
And a final one on Edinburgh as well, Andy. I mean, Richard Cockrell's had a tough start, and he's got Montpellier first up.
Yeah, I mean, with the signings that Edinburgh made in the summer to really strengthen their squad, which was really important because they were pretty bare last year, I thought they would have a good start to the season. Now, they've had a much tougher start, fixture-wise, than, say, Glasgow had. And so, but they have turned it around in the last couple of weeks. They've had a couple of bonus point wins, again, albeit against not the best sides in the Guinness Pro 14. So they will have to step it up. But they've actually got a physical pack. They've got a physicality up front that you need in Europe. So Montpellier will be tough, no doubt. I mean, you have hit the ground running with them in the south of France in the first game. And again, the step up in intensity and ferocity and everything, really, probably pace of the game will be pronounced on Saturday. And for some of these players, you know, a lot of them are international quality and they've been able to do that from Champions Cup into Autumn Tests or Six Nations. They know what is required, it's just whether they can do that. I think other teams will fear having to play Edinburgh. They're not the finished article at all, but they've got a physicality that you can have a game plan that can be successful in Europe.
And of course, we'll be talking more about Glasgow and Edinburgh later on the podcast. For now, though, Andy, thank you very much indeed for coming on. Enjoy the European weekend.
Thanks so much, guys. Cheers.
Now, Bath and Toulouse. That match is on Saturday, the 13th of October. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff local time at the Rec. It's on Channel 4, Virgin Media, BT Sport 2 and BN Sports. The day before, Friday the 12th of October, just a small matter of Leinster against Wasps. 7:45 kickoff local time at the RDS Arena. That's on BT Sport 2 and BT Sport 4K UHD. That's a serious matchup to get us started, Tom, isn't it? What about the packs? I know I'm talking to an old fly half and centre, but I mean...
We're going to ask Florent about the back lines.
Well, let's go that way.
But
in all truth, Florent, I mean, it's those two packs, they've got to come out all guns blazing, because if they don't, they could get a pounding loss.
Yeah, that will be a tough one if you don't get yourself, you know, ready for that kind of game. And I think there's no question that's where the game is going to be won and lost on the weekend. You know, that's the big difference. We know the backs can do the job, but if you haven't got the firepower in the front, you can't really do much.
You listening,
that.
Me? You haven't got the firepower.
No, I know she's looking at me, and yeah. I just with a slight.
It is true then. Well, it is true now. It was true then, and it will be always true without that. So yeah, you're right. Definitely, the forwards will have to be on their A game.
Predictions. Starting with that one,
Tom. You go first.
I'm going for two home wins. Actually, I'll go with Leinster and Bath.
Yeah, I kind of follow you on that one. I think the Leinster thing, the home ground, the opening of the station, the title, you know, the champion, the reigning champion going, you know, they've got to have to be up for it. And then, yes, Bath, definitely home ground. But Toulouse is not yet, you know, at that level. I think there'll be no... It won't be a walk for Bath, but I think they'll find out they can come out of Toulouse quite easily if they keep that pressure, as Andy told us earlier.
We've been asking on social media, which team is your tip to win the trophy in Newcastle come May and why? Brendan Coote on Facebook says, he's given me six reasons here, Brendan. Leinster, because they have the strongest and most in-depth squad. They've got the most accomplished, experienced and determined management and coaching infrastructure. They're a local team with a local team mentality. They've got great support and a great fan base, winning and a powerful mentality, a strong belief they'll do it again. They can visualise holding that cup again. Most of our players, point six, he says, are in the top five of their positions in world rugby as individuals. Each one excels. Brendan, what are you doing next week? Let's get you on the podcast. Yeah,
is there anything they can't do?
Yeah. There's something you don't want to do is be cornered by that man at the end of the bar. It's going to be fewer.
But he's got a point though, hasn't he?
He's got six of them.
And the rest, I'm sure, because he had to probably cream some a little bit of those.
He ran out of characters.
Panel predictions though, in terms of the pool, because it's Leinster's, everyone is probably going to put their mortgage on Leinster coming top, but if there is a runners-up position, who's it going to go to?
Oh, you've chucked that one straight out. You know, while I was still looking through the points that Brendan had made, I didn't see this coming up. I'm going to go for Leinster to win the pool, and then I will say Wasps to come runner-up.
Wasps is your old club, Florence, so I'm sure there's we can forgive you for being biased, but do you think they have a chance of coming runners-up?
Yeah, definitely. I think they're looking at where Bath is, the inconsistency they have shown this season. I think Wasps have a little advantage on them, and I think, you know, Dai Young and all that have a bit more experience there in all the bigger scheme of the competition. So I think, yeah, Leinster is a winner and Wasps behind them.
Right, to Pool 2 next. Castres Olympique, Exeter, Gloucester and Munster. And Munster's head coach, Johan van Graam, is a big fan of his side's round one opponents, Exeter.
Over the past few seasons in England, they've been brilliant. You know, the attack is almost second to none. You know, the way they keep the ball and the way they keep calm under pressure. They've created something special down there at Sandy Park. This will be the first time Exeter versus Munster. So I think both sides are really looking forward to that game.
They haven't played each other before, but this is going to be a hell of a ding-dong, Tom May.
Yeah, it's a massive game. Two sides that want to really, really play properly. Very direct. Munster, really physical. Exeter, I think what I've seen in Exeter over the start of this season, they can muscle up and they can grind their way through games and stick in there long enough to break down another team and then cut loose like they did a couple of weekends ago. They're 6 out of 6 in the Premiership. They're top. And they're doing brilliantly. I think this is going to be an absolute belter. But you're coming up against Munster, who've got, you know, that European history behind them, and we've heard, haven't we, over the past sort of couple of seasons, how they really want to get back to those glory days.
Flora, you've already spoken about your love affair with Exeter. tell me why you fancy them so much and think they have the potential. Because in seasons gone by, they haven't progressed as far as many thought they would.
No, maybe not, but I think they needed to learn a bit their trade. You know, they came through the rank, they built up that club from scratch. I mean, Tony Ray's got an amazing job there, pulling the club in the heart of every mine in the southwest down there. And I think as everything they've done, and I played against them when in my later day of rugby when we were a London Welsh, and we played. There was always passion off the pitch, and I think they kept that culture and they build off that. But there always seems to be a club we take one step at a time, but then it's a solid step all the time. And I think, you know, that's been what, 3 years now. They're coming in, you know, in the last three, and they're coming and showing. They're showing. And I think you're right, Tom, to say this season they've shown kind of a bit of a different game. They can adapt a little more. They can, and so yeah, they are definitely for me kind of a team who can surprise. On the other hand, they're playing Munster, so that's the other side of the. But Munster, where is Munster? Is Conor Murray going to play? Is he still injured?
Well, this is the big debate. I was going to say the halfback pairings is the big talking point in Munster right now, because you've got Joey Carberry, who's made the switch. Everyone can't wait to see how he performs in Europe. But what is going on with Conor Murray with his injury? Because obviously, as a player, Tom and Florent, this is obviously about his injury, the fact that he doesn't want the details divulged publicly. Do you agree with his right to say that? Or do you think because the fans want to know what is happening to their star number 9?
I can see it from both sides, because everyone does want to know what's going on with the best players in the world, and he is one of the best players in the world. But also, I can understand it from his point of view. You know, as long as he and the club are content with where things are, there's no real problem, and actually you can keep going the way we are, and we don't have to divulge any information if we don't want to. Maybe they should just give a bit more information so the Munster supporters just calm down slightly. There's clearly something going on that needs to be taken care of, but there's probably a large percentage of players across this Heineken Champions Cup that have got injuries that need managing. And it's how that messaging is given out to the fans that makes a difference.
And Florent, his replacement, the guy they signed to help out, Albie Mathewson, the New Zealander, he's now injured. So they have got a real fix.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, Jen. You know, that Munster can work, and then, but, you know, key players, leading players there in key positions seems to go through the numbers and back to the injured room at the moment. So, you know, Exeter, I think, could be in luck.
To Gloucester and Castres next. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff local time on Sunday, the 14th of October. Tom, you've already talked about Gloucester being your dark horses for it. What have you seen about Johan Ackerman's team? He says we've got to change tactics for Castres from Premiership-style rugby. So what kind of tactics do you think he's talking about?
Well, I think they've just got to be very careful about the size of the forwards in that cast pack, especially the back row. Players like Babio in the back row are outstanding.
if they get isolated, if they get themselves caught in the wrong position, they will get severely punished and punished physically. And it's be interesting to see how Gloucester try and match that. Do they match that toe for toe? Because they can, really. They've got players like Ackerman. They've got players like Peledri, who's been unreal. And I love watching him play. But then they can balance that with the pace of Vellacott, with the brilliance of Cipriani. And there's a bit of a balance to be had there. They're missing Urda Pijetta at the moment, and he's a big loss for them. So they've shifted Julian Demora from fullback to 10. And I think they lose quite a bit, Florent. Maybe you can highlight that.
Demora was the revelation of last season. And then, I think he was nearly voted player of the season. I think he came second, and Botica was actually voted player of the season in France last season. But yeah, you're right. But Cast is one of those teams, you know. If you know Urios a little bit, you know their coach is a character. He's built like a character, and he's got the ego and the speech and everything. And it seems that Cast team's got the players are molded on him. You know, it's kind of attitude, strengths, and you're right in everything you say. I think if Gloucester wants to go after them, they're going to have to make a choice between do we go toe-to-toe and just, go after them, or shall we play a bit more rugby and use our space?
But Florent, on that, in the last 14 seasons in top-flight European rugby, they've gone out in the pool stages 13 times out of 14. Not many people expect them to win on the road. Why is that? We're talking about the top 14 champions here.
I think the thing with Cast is that the culture at home is massive. You know, they play their heart out in their ground. But, last year they came as a, champion, and then just nobody expecting them there. But they show some character. So I think Urios is his last season at Cast. He's already said he's moving on. They've got a culture. They've got the players now. I think they've got some new talent emerging. They've got everything. They've got a bit more depth in their squad, which they maybe didn't have the previous year. So I think, it could be an opportunity for them to show a bit more.
So let's just look ahead to that match then. On Sunday, the 14th of October, Gloucester against Castres Olympique, 1 o'clock kickoff local time at King's Home. It's on BT Sport 2 and BT Sport 4K UHD and in BN Sports. Tom, your prediction on that one?
On the Gloucester game, I'm going to go for a home win. I think Cast will struggle down at Kingstown this weekend.
And in agreement, Florent?
Yeah, I think so. Despite everything I've just said,
it's completely.
But you have to agree. It's Gloucester is a tough ground to go to. And I think Gloucester have found some strength there on their home ground. I think they become back to what Gloucester used to be.
Saturday the 13th is Exeter against Munster, 3:15 local time, kickoff at Sandy Park on BT Sport 2 and BT Sport 4K UHD. By that time, Munster would have found a scrum half. Tom May, who's going to win it?
It's going to be very close, I think, but I'm going to stick with another home win. So it'll be Exeter.
Yes, no, I know that, Thomas. Thank you. Flo, see what I have to put up with.
Explain. You have to really explain it.
Flo, I mean, you're going home win as well?
Yeah, home win Exeter. I think, it'll be my pick again.
On social media, we've been asking, which team is your tip to win the Heineken Champions Cup in Newcastle next May and why? Colm Rich on Instagram thinks Munster. They've spent well, bringing in the likes of Byrne and Carberry. Niall Purcell on Facebook says he's keeping a close eye on Exeter. And Jack Thorne on Instagram is tipping Gloucester. And what are the pool, fellas? Who do you think is going to come top and potentially second runners-up?
I think Exeter might navigate themselves out of this pool as winners, and I'm going to go with, even though I back them to be my dark horse of this competition, I'm actually going to say that they're not going to get out of the group, and I'm going to go with Munster.
In the space of 35 minutes, you've totally changed your mind. Flo?
I've done a good job here, so that's good. So now Exeter, Munster, I think just one for experience, the other one because I think they're in five form at the moment.
Well, next we'll preview Heineken Champions Cup pools 3, 4 and 5.
Hi, I'm Luke Cowan-Dickie and I'll be downloading the EPCR European Rugby Show.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Florent Rossigneur. To pool 3 next, and Cardiff, Glasgow, Lyon and Saracens. And the Saris director of rugby, Mark McCall, thinks they're in a competitive section.
We haven't played Lyon before, but you just need to look at their squad and the squad that they've assembled to know that they're a proper rugby team, and they've started the top 14 season really strongly and had a couple of very notable scalps already. Glasgow are riding high at the top of their conference in the Pro 14. Stack full of Scottish internationals, very experienced team, very experienced coaching staff. Tough to beat at their place, and we're there first. And Cardiff Blues, who obviously won the Challenge Cup last year, and just recently beat Munster at home, a very strong Munster team, by 30 points. So, yeah, it is what it is, and you just got to get the first one out of the way and do as well as we can on that.
Tom May, what did Saracens learn following their quarterfinal defeat to Leinster? Because from then on, they were just on a different planet, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they probably got pretty upset by the way they left the competition when they were very confident, I would think, at the start of the season about where they would get to. They were disappointing, weren't they, during the group phases. I think each side, no matter what they want to try and do in their domestic and European competitions, at times they're going to come up against it. And last year happened to be Saracens' moment of strife, as it were. And they have kicked on. And I saw them this year play their league game against Gloucester. And I thought that was going to be a great game. And they absolutely thumped Gloucester. They were nowhere near at the races. It was one of the most accurate performances I think I've seen from a side in a long, long time. So I think their attention to detail, their focus now has, if it could ever have got any better, it has somehow. And I think that's a worrying sort of sentiment, I think, for Lyon, Glasgow and Cardiff moving into this competition.
Sarries, you feel, even though they've won this competition so many times before, they feel like they've got unfinished business because they were hurt so much, Florent, by last season.
I mean, the exit last season must have been in the mind of all the players and even the coach and, you know, all the team at Saracens. So I think, you know, what we see at the start of the season is a team which I say, OK, well, let's forget last season. Even we won a little bit. We wanted to win big and we haven't done it. So,
do you forget it, though? Or do you just remind them of the hurt?
I think you actually got to step up a little bit and just put another target to them, saying, guys, you know, we had everything to make it and we didn't really perform that day, or we bottled it a little bit. And let's start that season like if we mean business. And I think that's what happened with Sarri this year. They just come out of the block. I mean, the way they play, everything is accurate, everything is fast, everything looks like, you know, very very thought through. And you know, when you speak to some of the players or hear some of the players, they just seem like so relaxed, so in their zone, you know, the way they function. So yeah, I think they're going to be one of those teams in that group which, you know, if they're on the day, they're going to, you know, probably bump everybody else.
If they were disappointed, Tom, what about Glasgow? Because nobody, I mean, they were at times unrecognisable from the Glasgow of seasons gone by.
Yeah, it all fell apart from early doors, didn't it, for Glasgow? And I think the really worrying thing for them this weekend was the last time they played them was the year before last, I think, in the Champions Cup. And, oh, it went horrifically wrong then as well. So I think there'll be memories of that, I think, for Glasgow. And I think we all thought they were going to kick on from that last year, didn't we? But it was almost a hangover from that game against Saracens.
Big pressure on Adam Hastings to fill the void of Finn Russell.
Big, big pressure, especially when you see now what Finn Russell's doing at Racing, you know, really enjoying himself. That's gone from a top-class seasoned international to a young guy that's trying to earn his stripes and make his way in professional rugby. And it's a really big ask for a club that demands a lot, both at Pro 14 and European level.
Lyon Cardiff is the other match in this pool. That's on Sunday. Florent Rossigneur, give me your thoughts then on Lyon. Making their debut in the competition, Pierre Mignoni, you know, he's experienced coach, been there with Toulon. What should we expect then from the newcomers?
So I think, as you say, Pierre's got that experience about, you know, that competition. So I think he'll get the team ready. What Lyon is bringing now is, I think, they're getting better. They've got a squad. The squad is better. They still haven't got, like, the outstanding superstar in that squad. But they're working hard. They're building. They're getting in a motion. You know, they finished fifth in the top 14 last year. I think from what we've seen so far this season, they can expect a higher finish and probably push for a semi-final in a French rugby. But because they're a young team, I still think, you know, in the back of their mind, even they're going to throw everything at the European competition, their objective will stay top 14. So how far you go with that, you know if you really go in a competition and think, you know, okay, well, we're going to do the best we can, but with no real the idea of we're going to win it. It's a bit of a different type of mentality. So I think that will be Lyon kind of approach this season.
Tom, I was just going to say, we watched one of the best finals in European rugby back in May. Cardiff, the Cardiff comeback against Gloucester. How much of an inspiration do you think that's going to be to them now, knowing that they can perform like that on the day, the likes of Anscombe can lead them from 10 and really cause a few problems?
Yeah, well, I think it will give them a bit of a springboard, I think, to say, right, we're back on the top stage of European competition. Let's make a mark. You know, things have been going okay for them at home, I think, in their domestic competition. I mean, Halaholo in the midfield for them has been in great form. I think he's someone that can really set their attacking game alight. So I think it'll be a great game for them to come back into. They want to be away from home, get into the competition, see if they can nick a win on the road. If they can nick a win on the road, that's saying something for Cardiff, but I think it's going to be tough.
Well, there's a British and Irish Lion on the phone now. Not just a Lion, but a former Wales and Cardiff Blues captain as well. Martin Williams joins us on the pod. Hi there, Martin.
Yeah, good evening, gents.
This is going to be fascinating from a Welsh perspective to see how Cardiff fare under a new boss in John Mulvihill. What have you seen then in the opening, month and a half?
It's been pretty mixed, if I'm honest. They obviously lost their first three games, and there was a little bit of panic starting to set in. Season-defining game against Munster a couple of weeks ago at home, where they completely dominated, you know, a very good Munster team on paper, and have sort of chipped away the last 2 weeks but got two good wins. So I think they're in a really good place. You know, the fascinating thing, I did a few interviews at the start of the season. It's all well and good doing it in the Pro 14, but this is another level up and another step up, which a lot of these players, because it's been so long since the Blues have been in the Champions Cup, you know, this is a whole new experience going down to Lyon on Sunday. Although they went there last year and won in the Challenge Cup, it's different. But I think they're fairly confident. You know, they've won the last three out of three, so they're in real confident mood.
What of Gareth Anscombe, though? Because he wants that number 10 jersey for Wales, and Warren Gatland is going to be keeping a keen eye on so many of the Welsh players. What chance does he have?
He's got a big chance. You know, I know Warren Gatland's a big fan of him, Rob Howley. From a Blues perspective, it'll be very interesting, because if you look at the back end of last season, when they played their best rugby, Gareth Anscombe was actually at 15 and Jared Evans was at 10. And that combination works really well. Gareth Anscombe comes in as second receiver and he helps young Jared Evans out in front of him. He's his eyes. But he's played really well at 10. He had more or less, apart from Halaholo, he's one of the men of the match against Munster. But he does want to play in 10. I think that he's made that publicly known that he prefers number 10. So Rhys Patchell, Dan Bigger, they've got a lot of options there. If Anscombe will be in the squad, there's no doubt about that. But whether they see him as sort of the 10 to run the ship would be very interesting. And from a Blues point of view, I would actually rather see Anscombe at 15 and Jared Evans at 10, because I think there's more balance to the Blues team then. But he's a quality player, and you know, when he's on form and he's on the front foot, he's a very dangerous player, Anscombe.
Martin, just moving on to Pool 4 and the Scarlets. They've improved massively over the past couple of seasons, and actually out of Leicester, Racing, Ulster and themselves have arguably had the best domestic start to the season out of the lot. So do you think they'll be moving into this competition with a load of confidence that they can top this group?
I think so. I think that, you know, it speaks volumes of how far they've come over the last 3 years. If this group was named 3 years ago, they would be the dark horses and nobody would be fancying them, you know, in any way, shape or form. But going into it, I think you're right, they are favourites. Obviously, Racing are a big, powerful team, but you know, Scarlets did superbly last year to get to the semi-final and then come up against a juggernaut in Leinster. But you know as well as I do, Tom, it's imperative you've got to win your home games if you got, you know, any chance of going through the group stage. And they've been okay this year, the Scarlets. They've won the games. They haven't been firing on all cylinders, but do you really want to be firing on all the cylinders in September? You know, Wayne Pivac's a shrewd guy, and I'm sure they would have targeted this game, Racing, and hopefully they'll be picking in the right time, because you know they've got a mountainous pack coming to Park of Scarlets on Saturday, and they're going to need to be probably, it's going to have to be their best performance of the year if they're going to win on Saturday.
Can they get out the pool, Cardiff and Scarlets, Martin?
Oh, I think Cardiff is a difficult one. I think, you know, when you've got Saracens in there, that's going to be so difficult. I think they'll be confident against Glasgow, not really firing. I think for the Blues, if they win our first game against Lyon, then they're in with a chance of maybe getting through as a best runners-up. But I think for them, it's just re-establishing themselves back at the top table in Europe. Scarlets, definitely. I think, you know, you look at their group, Leicester and Ulster are hardly, you know, pulling up any trees in their leagues at the minute. Racing is going to be tough, but I think with the way the coaching team they've got down the Scarlets, the settled squad they've got, they have got a couple of injuries, but I think it'd be really disappointing if the Scarlets didn't get out of that group. So, and I would put money on them to get out of there.
Be cool. Martin, thanks very much indeed for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Cheers.
Martin Williams there giving us his insight. Let's look ahead then to those fixtures. Starting on Sunday, the 14th of October, Lyon against Cardiff. It's a 2 o'clock kickoff local time and the Mamou Stadium de Jolon. BN Sports, BT Sport 3 is where you can watch that game. Florent, how are Lyon going to get on against Cardiff?
I think they're on a good road at the moment. I think they'll play Cardiff and then they'll beat them. I think they've you know, they're second in the French league at the moment, full of confidence. I think they won't be despite everything just Martin say, but I think Lyon is on a roll at the moment.
Yeah, I'll go for a home winning that one.
And then Glasgow against Saracens, that's a 3:15 local time kickoff at the Scotsoon Stadium on Sunday. BT Sport 2 and BT Sport 4K UHD. Glasgow. They've got to have a much, much better start, haven't they?
Well, they have, and I don't think they're going to. So I'm going to go with my first away win.
Yep.
I think they're really up against that, against the Saracens side, who are banging mood for this.
Florent?
Yeah, well, I mean, after everything I say earlier, it'll be tough to not
pick
Well,
he's already changed his mind once since we started. Yeah, well,
might go again.
What about the pool? Okay, if we say Saracens are going to win this pool, who's going to go second?
That is a very good question. I think Lyon will finish second, actually. You know, as much as Florent says they'll focus on the top 14, I just wonder what the other two can produce. I think Lyon have got enough strength to beat those two sides.
Yeah, I mean, in my prediction I've got on this piece of paper, I did put Saracens in Glasgow and Lyon sneaking in, but you know.
It's not how it works.
It's not how it works.
Saracens and then three teams next to each other.
I asked for one.
Okay, well, I do think Lyon, full of confidence, you know, on a roll, everything, but still their focus will be top 14. So I kind of give Glasgow, because they've got to kind of push for cleaning up their act after the last few seasons of European competition.
On social media, we've been asking, which team is your tip to win the Heineken Champions Cup in Newcastle in May and why? Steph Braun on Instagram says, Saracens, they seem unstoppable just now. And Ross Wilding on Facebook says, Sarries to beat Leinster in the final. To pool four and Leicester, Racing 92, Scarlets and Ulster. Racing 92, Florence, old club, remember, they've been runners-up twice in the last three seasons. And those final defeats are motivating the squad, according to the captain, Dimitri Zarzewski.
Of course, if you were to compare the 2016 final and last year's, you can see that we've made some good progress, but there's still room for further improvement. We're very good at learning from our mistakes, and I hope that we've learned a lot from this latest failure. We now hope to win it and be able to display a star on our shirts.
And there was so much, Florent, to love about Racing in that final. And I think the neutral wanted them to win, arguably. They came out with the berets. They just got the sense of occasion down to a T. And even though they had all those last-minute injury problems, they came within a whisker of taking it to extra time. How much is that going to play on them?
I think they'll play, but I think I want to say about Racing, and I've been watching them, obviously, it's been my club, and my problem with Racing, and has been not this season, I've been the other few seasons past, they're just not played to win, they play not to lose. I don't know if that makes sense. A lot of their game is based on, you know, on pushing opposition to the mistake and just counter-attack that. They can do it really well, but you have to have the extra bit. And I think maybe this year, you know, Zabo in there, Russell.
Well, he's been outstanding, hasn't he?
You know, I brought a little bit, but I still have watched, you know, a few games this season for them. They're still going a bit too far in that defensive mode, if you want, in that kind of control game, and they don't want.
You did tend to expect a bit more from Dan Carter, from what he would contribute to Racing, wouldn't I think? Yeah. I was a bit disappointed.
Would you not say the Carter experiment was quite disappointing, really? I mean, did they get enough bang for their buck?
No. Gauging just on how much buck there was.
Yeah, a lot of buck.
You know, I think they would have expected a huge amount. And actually, what the return they're getting from Finn Russell in a short amount of time, I think it hasn't transformed their game completely, but it's kicked them into a new
there's
area.
There's more fluidity in the game. They suddenly, we can see ball moving a bit faster along the line. You know, they don't just bash across. They're just, you know, they're creating a style, if you want, of more offensive rugby, I would say.
How are they going to not do a Clermont? Clermont, who got very close as well, then fell off a cliff last season. Are Racing in danger of doing that?
for them, it's been a bit their problem, you know, over the last, you know, they've never very mentally mastered that top competition. And it's not just something at European competition level. It's also domestic season. If you look at what they have in terms of squad over the last 7-8 years now, what little return they have, I think one title of top 14, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, there must be a miscommunication between the coach and the squad. There must be maybe something they don't master. Maybe the life in Paris is too good and they just forgot to focus on weekend.
Tough gig, Paris, isn't it? Let's be honest. I mean, you had Toulon. That was equally tough.
It's even worse.
Yeah, so real tough gig. What about Scarlets then? Second season syndrome in Europe for them, because they were just fantastic to have in the competition to get to the semis. Everyone fell in love with them from a European perspective, but a lot of pressure now on Wayne Pivak's team to follow that up.
There is a lot of pressure. And you know, we heard from Martin talking about how they're progressing and how he would put money on them getting out of the group. And actually, I think given the way that their fixtures roll in this group competition, they play Racing first at home. Now, if they topple them, first of all, that will give them great confidence. Then they go to Leicester, who have been struggling all season and don't really know what they're about at the moment. So I can see them winning there. Then they're at home against Ulster. So arguably, by the beginning of December, they're 3 wins in.
Which is the polar opposite of what happened to them last season.
Yeah.
Because they started really badly in the pools.
And then if they beat Ulster in that game and Ulster haven't had a great start to the competition, perhaps they could win away at Ravenhill. Then they got Leicester at home. So they could get to that final game having won every game.
But Florent, their Achilles heel now is their pack. There's no Barkley. Tad Burns gone to Munster. Shingler's injured. So is Davis.
Davis not coming back soon, I think? So
but the point is, he hasn't been around. And even if he doesn't play this weekend, but the next one,
they
are light in the pack. Pivak knows that, and he knows that's where they're going to be targeted.
Yeah, I think, Racing's going to come up with, obviously, the biggest, the strongest, you know, what they've done really well over the years, you know, put the biggest guys who can run with the ball in hands. So Scarlett will have a massive, massive challenge up there. But sometimes, you know, it's not necessary the personal, it's about, you know, the belief. And I think, you know, Scarlett at home, you know, they saw so much character last year. They saw so much spirit in that team. So I think you could see, an over-performance if you want, especially having Racing coming at their place.
Now, the other match, of course, is Ulster against Leicester, and the Tigers skipper, Tom Youngs, can't wait for the challenge ahead.
If you want to achieve things in European rugby, you have to go to tough places and you have to win. So, you know, we've got a massive challenge with Ulster straight away, away from home as well. Their fans will be right on top of us and all that stuff. But, you know, that's as a player, you want to be tested. You want to be in some real tough environments. And that's when you can sometimes see the best in your team. And sometimes you can see your worst in your team if you don't perform particularly well. So, you know, you want to be tested as a professional. You don't want an easy sort of ride. And we've definitely got a tough pool to try and get through. And, you know, some massive challenges there. But one, as a player, you relish and you can't wait to take on.
So, Tom May, what should we expect of Leicester? I mean, they have so much. I mean, look at your face, kind of says it all. They've lost their head coach after one weekend.
They lost at home to Worcester.
Yeah.
That's not taking anything away from Worcester, by the way, because I saw what they did last
week. Well, their defence is leaking like a sieve, although you could argue it's tightened up a little in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and you, but you'd imagine it's been a pretty tough place to be after losing at home in that fixture.
Are there signs of improvement, though?
Small ones, I think, but I think they'll be pretty disappointed in Leicester with having started the season the way they have done. I think what this really gives them is a fresh opportunity to go into a different competition, clean slate, and go, right, let's start all over again. If we have an average domestic competition, then let's fly in the European competition. And there's no doubt they have the capability to play some brilliant rugby. You know, look at the players they've got at their disposal.
Say that their bench was on against Northampton at Twickenham was more or less academy players. They have not got a lot of strength and depth at the moment.
But when
Paul Lefella scoring, he's a 20-year-old. You know, coming off the bench,
he can play. Mind, I saw him in the junior.
But he hasn't played Champions Cup rugby yet.
No, he hasn't. But I think he might be about to.
Yeah, he's got good choice. And there's no one else.
That might be a great game away from home as well.
I think this fresh opportunity is. It'll do wonders for Leicester in terms of just getting into a different competition, different mindset.
What's happened to the Leicester pack, Florent? I mean, I know you love a good old scrap up front. When you look at that Leicester 8 right now, does it put the fear of God in you?
Not near where they were a few seasons back. I think they've lost that hedge which was make them this wonderful, oiled front eight. Home, they can, I can probably say they compete against everybody, but going away from home will be a big challenge for them, I think. Despite the start of the season, I think they haven't got that mentality anymore. I think it's going to be hard, and they're going through injuries at the moment. You know, they can't find any follow-through with their old squad. So pack, no pack, I think that's the question is not really kind of relevant at the minute for them.
What of Ulster then, Tom? Plenty of changes with McFarlane coming in as coach, a lot of players leaving, and the likes of John Cooney having to step up and kick them to victory and kind of lead the line. What do you expect from Ulster in this tournament?
I don't think we're going to expect, or I don't expect a huge amount from them. I think they've had a poor start in the top 14. You know, they find themselves behind Benetton at the moment, in fifth in their conference. I think it's going to be tough, especially with this group. I think you've got three sides in Leicester, Racing and the Scarlets that want to have a great European season, when actually I think at Ulster it's just about getting everything at home right, getting everything domestically right before they can really start to look beyond that.
So then to the preview, Saturday the 13th of October, Ulster against Leicester. It's a 5:30 kickoff local time at the Kingspan on BT Sport 2 and BT Sport 4K UHD. And then Saturday the 13th of October, Scarlets against Racing 92. That's a 5:30 kickoff local time as well. Parky Scarlets the venue, BT Sport 3 and BN Sports. Florent, your old club against the Scarlets, who's going to win?
Well, you know what? I know the Scarlets, you know, the excitement of Scarlets, etc. But I think Racing will come out of the block. And because the style, because the player they've got at the moment at their disposal, I think Racing can do a job there.
No, I don't. I think the Scarlets
the first
will win.
Time you two have disagreed.
No, I think the Scarlets will get a good home win, actually. I think they'll win on Saturday.
What of Ulster and Leicester?
I'm going to go for another home win. I think, I don't think Ulster will be up to much throughout the European competition, but I think they'll have enough to beat Leicester at home.
Yeah, as I say, I don't think Leicester have been a good traveller this season. I think they've got too much at home at the moment going on. So I think Ulster as well for me.
And do you expect Racing to top the group?
I expect Racing to top the group, yeah.
So who do you think is going to be runners-up?
Scarlets behind them.
I'll reverse that. I'll go Scarlets top, Racing second.
We'll talk in a few months.
Or not.
Or not.
Thank you, gentlemen. Pool 5 next. Edinburgh, Montpellier, Newcastle and Toulon. It's going to be interesting to see how Edinburgh start in this pool. Here's their head coach, Richard Cockerell.
Now, pleased with where we're at the moment, but we've got to challenge ourselves against the very best, and being in the Heineken Champions Cup is huge for us, and it'll be a real acid test of our development. You know, Montpellier, Toulon, the first two games, who, you know, huge heavyweights of European rugby, and can we consistently perform?
What do you make of Edinburgh's chances? Because not many give them a hope of getting out the pool. What can they realistically expect, Tom May?
I don't think that they can realistically expect to get out the pool. I think what they really will want to try and do is test the likes of Montpellier and Toulon. You know, how can we compare ourselves against, you know, what has been a European powerhouse in Toulon, what is a ridiculously physical dominant force in Montpellier, and where can they put themselves against those sides? I think they find themselves potentially mentally weak. I think that's
well, he said that openly about their defence, hasn't he?
Collins? Yeah, and I think they've openly said that, you know, we're a bit of a mixed bag at the moment. They beat Benetton 31-30, which I think probably was an uncomfortable week following that.
Well,
for the
frankly, if Treviso had kicked that, yeah, a conversion to win it.
So I don't think they're looking to try and progress. Yes, they'll all say they're looking to try and progress out of the pool, but I think this is a real test of where they find themselves.
Florent, what about Montpellier? They have a ridiculous budget, 27 million euro or about that, around that figure. They've got a huge pack. They've got some massive names, but they consistently underperform.
And they haven't got any fly half at the moment.
No.
You know, between
Cruden's injured,
Gosens out, yep, this weekend, they've got a big problem there, you know, I think. So money, you know, squad.
Doesn't bring you happiness, Laura, apparently.
apparently. Well, you know. But I think really, you know, Montpellier from last season was very, very South African and very kind of very one-dimensional, if I can put it that way, the way they played. I think with the like of Cotter coming in with Alex King and all that, changing a little bit the way they play, they're offering something a bit more. But for this weekend, not through the competition, but for this weekend, big problem for them. Who's going to direct their...
I mean, Richard Cockerell will be looking at this and thinking, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, stranger things have happened, but I think the one problem for the other sides is that they've got that much money that they can still have someone like Pienaar
that can step in at 10 who push out from 9. So I think he'll probably be in there. But you're right, you can lose. I think Fran Steyn's injured as well.
Yeah, he is.
You lose three players like that.
It's extraordinary.
Right. We've still got three tens
of that calibre. What about your old clubs then, Tom? Toulon and Newcastle. That's going to be fascinating to see how these two, because they are both having a shocking start to the season.
Yeah, I mean, Newcastle have had they've played some top sides at the start of this season and have been close in some of those and have not been as close in others. But both of these teams, and I don't think you would have said, having seen the seasons they had last year, I don't think if you'd said after the first block of domestic fixtures, they'll both find themselves in 12th. Toulon are really struggling. I've watched them play. I think they've lost Nonu, they've lost Vermeulen.
Ashton's not there. Is he a big loss?
The key one's Rendrandra.
Yeah, well, that's the one I was going to ask you about. Why on earth did they let him go?
It was one of the most bizarre decisions I've ever seen, because everything that was good about the Toulon's attacking game last season, Chris Ashton getting 1,000,001 tries in 10 games, that all was based around him supporting Rendrandra. And now he's gone off to Bordeaux and they are struggling. They're only a few points above winless Perpignan and they're level on points with Agen. That's where things have got for Toulon.
What about Newcastle then? Because Dean Richards is struggling and he's got a team with some stars in it, but increasingly few ones because they're all getting injured.
Yeah, they're struggling with injuries and I think it's something they have improved on in their strength and depth, but still they're a bit of a way off.
Isn't it interesting though how Europe can come at either a good time or a bad time for a team?
And if it comes at a bad time, things can get ugly real quick. And I've got a feeling that for one of these teams, it's going to be a horrible, horrible afternoon. But it's the first time Newcastle have played in the competition since I played in the last game. That was away at Stade Francais at the old Parc des Princes. So it's been a long time and they'll be really looking forward to it. And what a place to go and play.
Let's say you are Patrice Collazo right now, Florent, in the Toulon changing room. What do you say to try and inspire them?
Well, I think the problem for Collazo is actually being the new coach, the new players, is to actually to try to gel everybody together. And so far, when you watch them play it in the domestic competition, they seem like a bunch of individuals on the pitch, kind of.
That's always been the fear at Toulon, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, but I think with the talent, less talent on the pitch, actually, and unfortunately, when you had Nonu, all those guys, you know, you had Ashton, all those guys, one-on-one, they could make the difference and score the tries. And
one thing I'd ask Florent, that's so since Wilkinson left and now since Gitto's left, they've never quite replaced those two in terms of a key number 10. They've brought in Tranduk, who at times he's one of the most frustrating players.
You either love him or you hate him.
Yeah, they've got Bello who's played for France but is a bit hit and miss. Now I saw Carbonell in the under 20 championship over the summer and he was outstanding, but he's 20. So is that a real key piece of the jigsaw that they're missing?
Well, I think what's happening at Toulon at the moment, and that's the echo I've got from that part of France, is I think Bougival has kind of slowed down on the spending. Which is a fair point for.
He spent quite a lot.
He spent quite a lot. He slowed down, and as I say, you've got a young group of players, guys who haven't been together. We're trying to reinstate the glory of a club who was made of plethora of superstars, and a lot of pressure on them. And so yeah, so the chat in the changing room, to go back to your first question from Collazo, will be, well, guys, European competition, we've got a chance to kind of, evacuate what's happened in the last few weeks with the top 14. Let's go at it, see what's the result, and just give it a go.
So, who's going to win that match between Toulon and Newcastle? It's a 4:15 local time kickoff at the Stade Félix Maillot, Sunday the 14th of October. It's on FRDER, BT Sport 3 and BN Sports. Tom, which one of your former clubs is going to win that match?
Which one do I need to get back to the most?
Which one do you want for him to get off the base?
I think, you'd obviously say that Toulon are going to be really strong at home. I think if there's ever a chance for Newcastle to win an outstanding fixture in Europe, this could be it. So I'm going to stick my neck out and say Newcastle win this.
Florent? Yeah, I think I'm with you on that one. I have to say.
Oh wow! I thought I was going out on a limb there.
No. I think Toulon. Toulon form is not great, but also there is another element which I didn't mention. Their fitness seems out of line. They don't seem. And I think Newcastle, if there is one thing, they will be fit and they will be able to sustain 80 minutes of constant pressure and stuff like that. So that's a perfect recipe to go and win down in Toulon, you know, against a team which haven't got much idea, but also seems to lack the fitness required to compete at that level. You know, I see too many players when I watch Toulon at the moment walking from one point to another.
Montpellier, Edinburgh, I imagine more straightforward. It's on Saturday. It's a 4:15 kickoff local time at the GGL Stadium on BN Sports and BT Sport 3.
Very straightforward for me, yeah. Montpellier, I almost think, potentially steamroll that one.
Florent?
Yeah, I think Montpellier, despite the fly-half problem, even they're going to be targeted at that position probably. I think they've got enough talent and depth in that squad. There's a couple of youngsters on the verge of that first team group as well, which might be even called up to play in the position. So, yeah, Montpellier, no doubt.
Now, on social media, we've been asking, which team is your tip to win the Heineken Champions Cup in Newcastle next May and why? Hugo on Instagram likes Toulon's chances. You can follow us and get in touch on Twitter. It's at Champions Cup. You can search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook, and it's at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram. And when it comes to the overall pool standings at the end and the final analysis, who is going to be top?
I'm going to go for Montpellier to finish top, and I'm actually going to say that Newcastle will finish second in the group.
Yeah, Montpellier is a winner. Yeah, I mean, of the three others, is like it could be a bit of a toss the coin in
here. Make it up as you go along.
Yeah. Okay, now let's go. I mean, I think, you know, if Newcastle got that victory at Toulon, yeah, I'll follow Tom. Let's go to, you know, Newcastle winning Toulon in Toulon, then have a good start. You know, they might get it.
And of course, Newcastle would love to play at 2019 finals weekend in their own city, with the two main showpiece events at St James's Park on the 10th and 11th of May. Now, more than 30,000 tickets have already been sold for the Heineken Champions Cup final, and over 15,000 for the Challenge Cup, with Newcastle promising quite a weekend.
Yeah, we've promised rugby's greatest ever party. We can never get away from the fact that it's got to start on the field, showcase two fantastic games, and we've set ourselves an aim of 90,000 tickets sold over the two games. But it's outside of that as well. It's what we can do with the fan village. It's the other events we can put on. It's the role of the volunteers, you know, making sure that the hotels and the transport systems and everything is as good as it can be, and really just trying to deliver a world-class fan experience.
That's the Newcastle 2019 event director, Mick Hogan. Tommy May, you know Newcastle better than anyone. It's going to be an incredible weekend, isn't it?
Be a good party. Mick said it. It's going to be a great weekend. Hey, look, Newcastle is not known for its rugby team so much. It is more and more, but it's a footballing city. But actually, ever since the World Cup, when they hosted those games, they hosted South Africa, they hosted Scotland, they were outstanding events that the city did brilliantly to put on. They've had experience in hosting the Rugby League in the Super League Big Weekend, so they know what that's about. And I think they're going to have an opportunity to deliver something brilliant here.
And by the way, Marseille will host the 2020 Heineken Champions Cup and Challenge Cup finals at the Stade de Marseille.
Just so that gets better.
I mean, you know, it's getting better and
better. I mean, after Newcastle and Marseille, I can't believe it, you know.
Tough gig, isn't it, Florent? Yeah. It's going to be a brilliant weekend in the south of France for that one. Now, that's the Heineken Champions Cup sorted. We'll also have the European Rugby Challenge Cup to look forward to. And we'll take a look at that next.
You're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
This is the EPCR European Rugby Show. I'm James Burridge, previewing the European rugby season in the company of Tom May and Florent Rossigneux. A quick look ahead now to the European Rugby Challenge Cup pool stage, which, like the Heineken Champions Cup, gets underway on Friday the 12th of October. The five pools are Clermont Auvergne, Dragons, Northampton Saints, Timisoara Saracens. Pool 2, Ospreys, Pau, Stade Francais, Worcester. Pool 3, Bordeaux Bègles, Connaught, Perpignan and Sale. Pool 4, Bristol Bears, Yenisei STM, La Rochelle and Zebre. And Pool 5, Argenne, Benetton, Grenoble and Harlequins. Tom, Florent, pick out a couple of exciting round one encounters for me.
I think it's pretty difficult to look past another one of my old teams in Northampton Saints. Their opening round fixture against Clermont is an absolute belter at Franklin's Gardens. I'd also like to, I guess, have a little look at Perpignan, who play against Sale on Friday night. I think Perpignan really struggled since they've come back into the top 14, but what a place to go and play European rugby for Sale.
Quinns against Argent's quite tasty as well, isn't it, Florent?
Yeah, I think, you know, Quinns against Argent, I think It's quite tasty, but my point with Agen is same as Perpignan. They're looking for points in top 14, not so much for competitiveness in the challenge. And I think because the depth of their squad is not that it's not massive, they're going to probably, it's not going to be in the big focus. I think if you look at another game, I mean, I agree, the Northampton Saints against Clermont is a very exciting idea. You know, Clermont, top of French rugby at the moment, they're playing really, really well. They seem to have found that form again. And
they got stuffed at Franklin's Gardens in that final pool game. So yeah, there'll be an element of revenge in all of this. You would have been a brave person for predicting Cardiff would have won this tournament 12 months ago, Tom. So who's going to win it this time?
Did I not?
No, you didn't.
I think I am going to go with Clermont. I think they're going to be really strong. And as their form and momentum picks up domestically, I think that's going to make them even harder to beat.
Fair call, Florent?
Yeah, fair call. I think Clermont will be the champion. Oh, I'm saying something here. I mean, I might regret it in a few months. But, you know, no, I think Clermont definitely will come and do the job there.
Now, for this competition, here are the social media addresses. Twitter, it's at ER Challenge Cup, and the European Rugby Challenge Cup page is on Facebook too. So get in touch with us and give us your thoughts. Right, that's the European Rugby Challenge Cup done. Next, it's my turn to get revenge on Tom May.
I'm Ken Owens, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Let's talk about Champions Cup fantasy rugby. I don't know if you heard that whiff of disgust from Tom May, because he knows he's going to be beaten. Head to HeinekenChampionsCup.com. There's daily fantasy rugby and the classic version, which we're going to stick to for now. Go to the website, pick your 15-man squad ahead of the new season. I'm going to give you some basics, and then Tom will pull my team apart in about a minute's time. The total value of your initial squad must not exceed 100 million euro. Now, that's harder than you think. You can select up to three players from a single team during the pool stages. Each round, you select a captain and a kicker. Your captain will score double. Limited transfers between rounds, but unlimited free transfers until your first round deadline. And there are three special cards to play on a single round of your choosing. Right, you can be quiet, Tom. Listen to my team. So I've got front row Harry Williams, Camille Shah, and Varapava Ruskin.
It might be the classic format. It's not a classic team, though, is it?
Just listen. Atwood and Ryan in the second row. Florin will like this. Armand, Nizam Khan, and Vunipola. Vunipola is my captain. I've got Gareth Davis and Cipriani, 9 and 10. Ringrose and Earls in the centres. Strettle and Sinotti on the wings. And Dolman at fullback.
Oh, he's not cheap, Dave Strettle, is he?
This is the thing I found, is that props are relatively cheap in fantasy rugby, which is the polar opposite from real life.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Come on then, Thomas.
Well, you're going to try and make this difficult, are you?
What? Have you got your team yet?
No. See, I think it was pretty average of you to be picking it fairly early on in the week.
So when are you going to start yours? Not till Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, probably. I've got time.
Some of those players might not be even playing, you know?
You've hardly got any French players in there.
I've got a few. You've
got one. Basically picked an England team.
No, that's complete wrong.
What, from English teams?
No, there is one English player, two English players in the back line. We could argue about this all night. Right. If it's a good game to play, it is hard. You will admit it's quite tough to pick a team.
It's a great game to play, especially if you're playing against you.
They're not all playing against me. Actually, my team name is I Want to Beat Tom May. And if I do, I think we should have a little wager, maybe a bottle of champagne on it or something.
Okay, fine.
So let's play Champions Fantasy Rugby.
Newcastle Brown Ale.
Yeah, better idea.
I'm going on it on this weekend. I'm definitely just putting a team in.
What are you going to bring to the party, Phil?
Oh, I don't know.
Something more than you, mate.
HeinekenChampionsCup.com. Tom and I, we're going to be putting our teams in. Florent will join us, and it'll be fascinating to see how we all get on during the course of the season. Well, it's now 20 seasons since Ulster won the European Cup title, beating Colombier 21-6 in the Lansdowne Road final. A triumph which still seems remarkable, even to the man who lifted the trophy, David Humphreys.
Very quickly, as a calculation, all but three of us, I think, were from Ulster, had grown up playing club rugby in Ulster, grown up aspiring to play for Ulster. But you look back now, and when you try and rationalise or assess why we were successful, it was one of those things that just happened. We were lucky. We were by no means close to being one of the best teams in Europe. We were just part of a journey that we all look back on now and go, well, that was a great few months, and we'll always be very proud to have been part of that.
Now, the journalist Jonathan Bradley has written a book about that fabled Ulster team called The Last Amateurs, which is out this week. Jonathan, wonderful to have you on the podcast. Put that scale of the achievement into context for us.
I think that's something that's it's incredibly hard now, just thinking back 20 years about just how unlikely that achievement was. I mean, if we look at the way the competition is now, as great as it is, we don't really see surprises in it. The teams that do well in this competition and win this competition tend to go on and win it two or three times, certainly be in finals consistently. But when we're talking about this Ulster team of 98-99, you're talking about a team who coming into the competition had won two games in the past three seasons, didn't win either of their first two games in the pool, and then with all this history against them, somehow won seven in a row to claim the trophy and beat Toulouse twice and Stade Francais, really the best sides of the day, on the way to do it. As David Humphrey sort of alluded to there, as a team that was nowhere close to the most talented in Europe.
So even though they were nowhere close to being the most talented in Europe, and however unlikely it might have seemed, what were the reasons for that success? There must have been something that they based their game on.
Simon Mason's right boot, more than anything else. If you look at the game plan, he had two really, really good rugby brains in David Humphreys and Mark McCall, who was injured before the European campaign started, so went into that season as captain, but didn't actually play in the European games that season. But the two of them had both come back from London Irish that summer to come back to Ulster, and were really integral in bringing up this defence that they called the four-up defence, which was basically just, rather than have the centres and one of the wings hang back, they would just basically try and get up to the line as quick as possible, put a real emphasis on line speed, and ultimately try and win as many penalties as they could. And Simon Mason, it felt like he didn't miss all season. So it wasn't by any means the most expansive sort of game plan, but it was something that other teams, especially the French teams, really struggled to deal with because they hadn't seen it at the time. It seems commonplace now, but it was almost a rugby league style tactic that they brought in for that season.
What did that 1999 success, though, mean for Ulster in general, Jonathan?
Oh, it means a huge amount to Ulster rugby. I mean, you look at the start of that season, the first game of that season being a friendly against Morocco, you've got a couple of hundred people there. Even Interpros, you used to be lucky if you would get crowds beyond a couple thousand, whereas now what we see today, regularly getting beyond 10,000 for every game. An awful lot of that commercial success is really built on how people were captured by that 98-99 run. I mean, you can see the way it built even in the attendances of the Toulouse quarterfinal. It was the first time Ravenhill had been sold out since the All Blacks came to Belfast in 1989. And then to go from where they were then at the start of that season to having 20,000 people coming to a game of rugby in Belfast to watch the Stade Francais semi-final. It's just the magnitude of the change in Ulster rugby and what was essentially only 4 months. Because again, remember, you know, the final was played in January because it had to be in before the Five Nations. So it was such a short competition, but it really just revolutionised the way people engage with Ulster rugby, I suppose.
Do you think it's set an unrealistically high bar now, though, for Ulster?
It's one of those things, isn't it? You know, interviewing Simon Mason for the book, he's a massive Liverpool fan, and that's the parallel, I suppose, that he makes of, you know, there's Liverpool fans that almost bristle at the mention of 1990 now because of how long it's been since they last won. But for me personally, I think it's more a case of you can celebrate the uniqueness of 1999 and the achievement of 1999 without comparing it to the modern team. I mean, as I'm sure nearly all of the players would admit to, and most of them do in the book, the 2012 Ulster team was far better than the 1999 team, and they got hammered, having got to the final. So it's really hard to compare the two, because I suppose the parallel that I make is it's the same season that Manchester United won the treble. And if you were to compare football then to football now, obviously there's been innovations and things are always growing, but you can compare the two because there's similarities there. Whereas comparing rugby 20 years ago to rugby now, it's like a different sport, you know?
So 20 years on, is this the year for Ulster? They've got Leicester, Scarlets and Racing in their pool. How are they going to fare?
It's funny, we had this conversation in a marketing meeting for the book of wouldn't it be great if this was the year that Ulster did go all the way. And unfortunately, I had to sort of tell the book publishers that probably wasn't likely. I mean, when you've got Racing and Scarlets, so you've got two teams that have done so well in the competition of late, It's a big ask. I know Racing have lost a couple of times at home already this season in the top 14, but you're looking at it, if you really need to get a result against Leicester because you've got this massive task of going to Paris in round two. So Saturday's game's hugely important for the chances of just getting out of the pool, which would be a big achievement because you have to remember Ulster haven't gotten out of their pool into the knockout since 2014 and that quarterfinal with Saracens. So even to get back into the last eight, I think, would be a huge thing for this team because they are in something of a rebuilding phase after an awful lot of retirements, departures and a couple of head coaches leaving in the last 12 months as well.
Jonathan, great to have you on the pod. Thanks very much indeed. Jonathan Bradley, who's written this wonderful book about that fabled Ulster team. It's called The Last Amateurs, and it's out this week. Now back to 2018, and one extra thing to tell you about in terms of round one this weekend, when female sighting commissioners will preside over European professional club rugby matches for the first time. Former Scotland prop Beth Dickens will oversee Connacht against Bordeaux Bègles, whilst former player and coach Danny Zamboulis is working on Timisoara Saracens' battle with the Dragons, both in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Well, let's hear from both, starting with Dickens.
Fair play and respect is such a fundamental value of the sport, and being part of the disciplinary process is key to getting that right and making sure that everyone is adhering to the same values, and being part of that is just really quite exciting.
It's good to see that other people do not see a gender difference, but otherwise I'm just doing what everybody else is doing.
Well, Zamboulis has already made history in the Gallagher Premiership when she became the first female sighting officer last month. Well, the appointments continue the move to increase diversity in EPCR tournaments. Joy Neville became the first female match official in European competition two seasons ago and the first female referee last season. And Tom, no doubt the difference this is making to the sport.
Yeah, look, I think women's rugby is growing rapidly, and certainly having women get involved, certainly at this level, whether it be refereeing or officiating in any other capacities, is a really good thing for the game.
Now, don't forget to watch round one of the Heineken Champions Cup this weekend. All the matches are on BT Sport in the UK and Ireland. BN Sports is the home of the Champions Cup in France, with a majority of fixtures from each round. FR Deux also have the Toulon-Newcastle Falcons match. And both Channel 4 in the UK and Virgin Media in Ireland will broadcast Bath against Toulouse on free-to-air television. And that match will also be made available through NBC Sports in the United States, which will also have all Heineken Champions Cup matches available through NBC Sports Gold. Right, fellas, before we go, time to put your necks on the line. A winner.
Already?
Already.
I will go with, we're just before week one, so we'll go with a team that won last game, so I'll go with Leinster.
Can you give me a leading point scorer as well?
Owen Farrell.
So you're
totally
reversing
down the middle. Tight.
Yeah, you're so down the middle. Nothing changes in a new season. Florent.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I'm going to stay to my idea. I think Exeter could be that package, I think, in that cup. I think they show maturity in the last few seasons. I think I'm going to stick my gun out for Exeter this year and make sure they go all the way this time.
No chance.
Well, that's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't forget, the Heineken Champions Cup gets underway on Friday the 12th of October with 10 great matches across the whole weekend. Stay up to date with the competition on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, and go to HeinekenChampionsCup.com to play Champions Fantasy Rugby and for all the best content. But for now, from Tom May, Florent Rossignol and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.